Any views expressed in this program do not necessarily represent those of WSIC.
All systems are a go.
Ladies and gentlemen, hold on to your seats. Taking Care of Iredell with North Carolina State Representative Jeff McNeely is about to begin in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Good morning, Iredell County. Hey, it's a little cool out there, but it looks like a nice day. I think it's supposed to be a little rain in the evening here, maybe, but so far you got a nice day to get out and do what you can. A little muddy, but anyway. Hey, going to have a good show today. Hope you stay tuned. I got Sam Adolfson going to call in. He's with the Foundation for Government Accountability, FGA. I've had Roy on from FGA before, and I got Sam coming on. Tagging on to what we did last week with Treasurer Dale Falwell talking about Medicaid. Got to get those right. Medicare is for your elderly. Medicaid can be both for the poor and the elderly, depending, but both government programs. And so Dale, you know, saying that the hospitals have told us they're losing money, need to expand it. Come to find out, maybe they're not losing money. According to his research, they're actually making money. And so Sam's going to come on and talk to us a little bit about the woes. And we've talked about this before, but the reason I bring this up now, we're getting ready to go back into session in January, and the Senate has already come to terms, and they want to do Medicaid expansion. And the House, the smarter branch, is wanting not to at this point in time. We don't have the appetite for it. So there's going to be a struggle through the whole session. And imagine we'll come down fighting each other, Republican against Republican, over the budget, over Medicaid expansion. I'll be curious to see where it goes. But we'll talk with Sam, get some of his insight. Anybody like to call in, 704-873-1400, please do. We'd love to hear what you got on your mind this morning. Real quick, very fortunate, got to go to ALEC, American Legislative Exchange Council, annual meeting. They have it. It's their policies and conference that we go and we look at other bills that other states have ran and see if we like them or not. It's usually a conservative blend, free enterprise, less government, you know, federalism. The states have control of their destiny. I like everything about what they stand for. So it's a good thing. It was in Washington, D.C. So I'd like to, you know, thank some of the people. Our representatives up there were very gracious, come by and saw us, ate dinner with us one night, took us on a sort of backdoor tour of the Capitol. Richard Hudson was very gracious to us. Let us ride with him on the little trolley, the little train that runs underground that takes you from one wing of the Capitol to the center so they can vote, and that was pretty cool. The little kid in me come out, or the big kid in me, I don't know which it was, Isaiah, but anyway, got to do that. Ted Budd, our senator-elect, come by, talked with us. Dan Bishop, David Rouser, Virginia Fox, Greg Murphy, great group of Congress people that we have in the U.S. House of Representatives. We're very grateful for them, do a fine job. And, funny thing I learned, Isaias, actually marijuana is legal in Washington, D.C. Even though it's not a state, it's legal there, which, you know, maybe explains why Tom Tillis and Richard Burr voted like they did on the Protect Marriage Act, which has nothing to do with protecting marriage. So maybe that explains a whole lot, you know. Ba-dum-boom. All right. Anyway, and got to speak with Tom Tillis. Very short, brief talk. I don't think he wanted to hear what I had to say. He told him that me and quite a few other North Carolinians were not pleased with the way he voted on that particular bill that just passed the Senate. So, there's rumor that he may be running for governor in 24. I don't know how strong a rumor it is. Don't know if it has legs, but that's what they're saying. To me, I think it's going to be hard to fight your way out of a Republican primary after that vote, amongst other ones, you know, that he's done here lately. So it should be interesting to see where this goes. Looks like we got a caller. Let's see who we got here. Hey, this is Representative Jeff McNeely. Who we got? Hello.
Hello, Todd.
Hey, we got some. Who we got here? Hello?
Hello.
Hey, this is Representative Jeff McNeely. Who we got?
Raymond.
Hey, Raymond.
I'm my buddy there. One that was in the Air Force.
Y'all were in the Air Force?
Yeah.
Okay, well, appreciate your service. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, I need to put an ad on it. My son looked for
Are you trying to get to the home ad show?
Yeah.
Okay, well, it's already off for today, but you can call back tomorrow at 8 o'clock. 9:20. Call back tomorrow about 9 o'clock, 9:20, and Pat will be back in, and he can get you on his show. This is Jeff McNeely taking care of Iredell right now.
I don't tell you what time it was.
Yeah, we done got a little bit past 11.
Okay,
son. All right, well, I appreciate you. Thank you. All right. So, anyway, yeah, well, I'll be curious to see how things work out if he does decide to run for governor. I feel like Tom Tillis's time is coming to an end, but that's just a personal opinion of mine. He's still got a couple more years yet in the Senate for us. So hopefully him and Ted Budd can work together, and I hope they bring a little more conservative attitude to what happens in the Senate. We'll see. He does have an uphill battle. He's not in the majority there, but it is close, and we definitely need to make sure we have our conservative values represented. One other thing I want to talk to, and like I said, anybody else wants to call in, even if you think you need a home ad, we'll direct you a different way. But if you'd like to call in and tell us what's on your mind, go ahead and give us a shout. Governor Cooper has now gone about, and this happened a couple weeks ago, but I've been digging around a little bit, and that's what I like to do sometimes. Maybe I bring up some old news or some new news every once in a while. But Governor Cooper has appointed a commission to reform the UNC system's appointments to its board. Now, right now, the legislature makes recommendations to the governor of appointments, and he can either yes or no them, but he doesn't necessarily get to pick and choose who goes on, so he doesn't like that. He would like a little bit more power to be able to put some of his buddies on the board and saying that, you know, we're doing a bad job of picking people. Seems like the people that we put on have had a more conservative flair to them than probably he would like, and a lot of his supporters. And you know, the UNC system is the play toy of the liberal side of the North Carolina for sure. Looks like we got a caller, Isaiah. So let's see who we got here. Hey, this is Representative Jeff McNeely. Who we got?
We got Tony, Jeff.
Hey, Tony, how are you?
I'm blessed. I hope you are.
I am. What you got on your mind this morning?
I was accidentally on the internet last night, and it showed where Biden signed a piece of paper where they're going to try to change all the American money into a coin to where it can be traced everywhere it goes. What do you think about that?
Well, there was some talk that Wade buried deep in a bill that he signed this summer. It would allow for a future electronic American currency to take place, kind of like your crypto stuff that's going on. Now, when that's going to happen and how they're going to get away with it, I don't know. I think if they would have kept the House of Representatives, you might see it happen. But right now, that's kind of just laying there. It hasn't raised its head, but it could. It could. There is a possibility that we could go to all electronic currency, but with some of the things that's happened lately with FTX, with FTX basically causing people to lose billions of dollars, all of a sudden they've kind of slowed their roll on electronic currency. I'm in the process of talking with bill drafting right now about running a bill that businesses should have to accept your cash if you want to pay them that way, that they cannot be just credit or debit alone. Because in my opinion, it says on there for all good and legal tendered debts on our money. And I think if you have cash and you want to use cash instead of a card, I think you ought to be allowed to.
Yeah, I do too.
They're already tracking us with everything else we do. When you punch in your number at the grocery store to get that discount, when you go to the service station, they're tracking you however they can. I just don't think I need anybody to know what my business, tell you the truth.
Well, I don't either, you know, but hopefully we can keep doing it.
Well, I'll try to see what I can do on the state level. And then we'll get in. Then we'll get into a fight with the state and the federal, and I guess we'll all go to court. But we'll at least drag it through the mud and see what we can do. I don't see that happening anytime soon, but don't think that there's not a possibility that it can happen. It can't. And if they'd have kept the house, if they'd have somehow worked their way and kept the house, you might have seen it before this administration was done these 4 years. So just keep praying. Keep praying.
I sure will. Thank you, sir.
All right, man. Good to see you, Tony. Looks like we got somebody else. Let's see what we got here. Hey, this is Representative Jeff McNeely. Who we got?
Well, I'd rather not say, Jeff. I'll just let you figure that one out.
I think it's Sick and Tired Patriot again. I've heard that voice before.
Man, to the other callers talking about, you know, using some kind of form of payment. I mean, it should be legal to trade for anything a man wants to trade for, correct?
On our money, it says good for all.
I'd have to get it out. You know,
take a look at it.
Man not trade for whatever he wants to trade for?
I don't know. With electronic currency, I'm pretty sure they will be able to track every step you take.
Oh, definitely. But I'm thinking somebody want to ship me some silver, gold, yeah. Or something. I send them their product like in the good old days.
There you go.
The snail mail it. Is that not legal?
It is right now. Here's the thing, says on our money, this note is legal tender for all debts, public and private. So.
I've seen some pretty convincing videos talking to the internet, it just makes me wonder if y'all guys holding office and stuff, is there something going on to where y'all would be afraid that y'all's lives are in danger to be able to speak your mind and what you think? Are y'all worried about something or is somebody endangering you guys?
I will tell you this. I have been spit on down there in Raleigh, and hilariously, it was by the more conservative right wing side that spit on me, and I had to identify myself.
You see, you shouldn't have to work in that environment.
I know.
And to be able to do what y'all need to do, if y'all got to get security detail, you need to get security detail.
You need to
put that in your bill.
Yeah, and we talked about that. You know, there's actually a federal law that they're not really enforcing, like with Kavanaugh and even with Nancy Pelosi and all that. But on the local level, you know, we really don't have anything in the books in North Carolina, and I think we do need to have something, because I can tell you right now, somebody comes to my house
wanting
to trespass on my land to have a talk with me in some way or another without identifying themselves and asking permission, there's going to be some issues. They're not going to like the ramifications, especially if I'm not there and my wife is. I can just tell you right now, folks, y'all want to see somebody get on you, you just wait.
That's like what happened to them guys on that football field, idiotic stuff like that. Luckily, they had some security there, the ones that were there. On the baseball field that day,
when Salisi got shot, Salisi.
But nobody holding office should be able to have to hold their tongue because of the afraid of their life or anything. You know, it's anyway, I just want to put the Sick and Tired Patriots 2 cents in.
Well, I mean, and that's what, you know, it's funny. You'll hear the left say, oh, it's the right-wing fanatics that do this. And the right will say it's the left-wing fanatics. But what it is, it's just the fanatics. It's just the fanatics. Right. And just like anybody trying to do coercion with a judge or a jury, the same with politicians. Yeah. And I don't fear. I tend to quote a famous Civil War general. If that's the way the Lord takes me out, I cannot avoid that day. It will be that day that I go.
That's right.
But I'm going to do all I can, and that's the way it is.
You can't fear, that's for sure. You got to stay strong. You got to go
this
at
is,
it, man.
This is not an easy job. This is not a, none of these none of these jobs are, they're not easy jobs, but you know that if you're going to freedom ain't easy either. And if you're going to keep it, it darn sure ain't easy.
And that's right.
So,
yeah, I appreciate it, bud.
Thank you, Jesse. Thank you. I do worry. I do worry a lot of times about my family. So I can take care of myself. I asked for whatever I get, maybe, or I didn't ask, but I knew what I was getting into when I signed up. They didn't. So I suggest you leave people, especially their families, out of their situation here if they're politicians or whatever they may do. Getting back, like I said, Roy Cooper's formed this commission, and this commission has the last two presidents of the UNC system, Tom Ross and Margaret Spelling, as the chairs of it. Funny thing is, both of those people were relieved of their duties for different things that went on under their term that almost were criminal to a point. So it's funny that Roy goes out and gets disgruntled ex-employees to head this commission to do a witch hunt. And that's what this will be when it gets done. It'll be a witch hunt as far as this commission and telling the legislature what they should do and how they should go about it. I'm sure they're going to want to recommend to us to take it out of their hands. The funny thing is we're the ones that get to vote on it. So we'll see how this story plays out. But I got a pretty good ending. I've done flipped to the back and read the last chapter. So, but once again, a lot of wasted time, a lot of wasted effort, and darn sure a lot of wasted money to bring this commission about, because we'll pay expenses, we'll pay a lot of things to get these people to meet. So we probably got time for one more call. Let's see what we get here. Hey, this is Representative Jeff McNeely. Who we got?
Hey, Jeff, this is Chris. Just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on all this stuff that's come out with Elon Musk brought out to our attention. Kind of surprised you hadn't talked about that, Jeff. I'd like to hear your thoughts.
It's on my list down here. And
that should have been the first thing you said.
Well, I'm waiting to see where this goes. I didn't want to jump in too far ahead because no action has been taken. Nobody has said that this is evidence, this is judiciary yet. This is just a lot of internal stuff. Oh yeah. I mean, okay.
Well,
I can't believe the people at Twitter didn't, you know, I'm thinking all the really good documents have been burnt, buried, sledgehammered to servers, the whole nine, you know, the Hillary Clinton effect. So, to find anything at all tells me they must have been a crap load of it. Because I'm pretty sure that, you know, those people always say they're not stupid, they're just crazy. So I'm pretty sure they got rid of the really smoking guns. This is just the stuff we're going to have to piece together. But it looks pretty damning to me.
It's telling. The thing is, Jeff, along with you putting it to below the, you know, burying it down, the news has too. So that tells me something too. Look, I know everybody's trying to move on from Trump. That's evident. But I don't believe that's what the American people want. But at the end of the day, we have got to make this right, whatever way that is, or at least show what happened and arrest some folks.
Actually, arrest. We love to make a lot of accusations, and we find a lot of fault, and we prove it wrong, and we do nothing. And that's the problem in our political arena. We pretty much said, it's like NWA wrestling, you know, no holes barred, anything you want to say, do whatever. It's a show. It's not true politics.
Well, the problem with our, Jeff, is the Republicans will not stand up. We are getting ready to once again put Kevin McCarthy as the Speaker of the House. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows he's not a true conservative, but everybody's going to stand by him because they have to.
Yeah.
They threw Trump under the bus, and that's the reason our country is in the shape it's in. So I appreciate you, Jeff, and I'll let you go.
Well, that's fine. And I ain't dodging Hunter Biden. I just want to get more information, folks, before I bring anything to you. One thing you got to understand, I have sources. I use different magazines, newspaper outlets. I use blogs. I use a lot of things. Rarely do I make statements that I don't have somebody that has done the reporting. I just sort of bring the news that you don't see to you. And the reason is it's very easy to get sued for slander when you start making outrageous accusations with no proof or no viable trail to follow. And I think we've had that happen here not too long ago, and it actually happened, I think, here at this radio station. So I try to make sure I'm accurate. So I'm waiting to see what we're going to get with Twitter and how much collusion there was between them, the Democrat National Committee, the Biden, at that time, the Biden election team, and where they've gone since the election, and how much have they tried to squelch down. So this is going to be an interesting ongoing play. What I do thank the Lord for is Elon Musk, and I never thought I'd say that. But thank you, Lord, for Elon Musk. And I think Elon is a libertarian at heart, but I think he saw that it's just gone too far. It's just gone crazy between the wokeness and all the other stuff that's going on. Nobody should be that afraid to say something, to talk. Even David Chappelle said on Saturday Night Live here a couple of weeks ago, you know, nobody should be that afraid to speak up on anything in America. Let's try not to use too many cuss words, but still, speak up on anything. And I think that's where we're at. That's the fear. That's the fear. That's what we've got. They've quietened one way or another. So we've got to watch ourselves of that. Real quick, going back on this commission that's been brought about, we've actually tried to, I feel like at the legislature in the last bit out there, turn the corner on some of the craziness that happens inside our system to reel it back in. We've gone from being a UNC system that tries to do higher learning to one that advocates politically, that takes a side, that teaches curriculum that really doesn't make any sense to the mainstream student body. So because we've stifled some of the craziness, this is Roy Cooper and his crazy left trying to bite back. And you know, hey, I can tell you, like I said, this book is kind of done written. I've already seen what they're going to say in my mind, and I'll guarantee you I'm right. And I've also seen the conclusion to it, too. So just know that as long as the majority of the legislature is where it's at now, we're going to continue to appoint solid people to our boards of governors at our university so they make solid business decisions, not knee-jerk responses. That's what we need. College is a business. We educate children, but it's a business. And that's the people who are on your boards of trustees. Remember that. One thing, too, we need to worry about, real quick, getting ready to go to commercial break. Going to have Sam Adelson on with us. But Title 42 that has been able to help control our borders will end December the 21st. If you think it's bad down there now, folks, just wait. It's getting ready to get a whole lot worse. December 21st is where it's going to end. Let's see what the Biden administration does. There's rumor that they realize how crazy things are actually now. Maybe Kamala Harris actually spoke up at some meeting and said, hey, I've been reading a lot of stuff on the internet, and it's crazy down there at the border, because she sure as heck hadn't gone down there and looked at it herself. So there you go. So just get ready for that. That'll be a good Merry Christmas. Going on commercial break. Hang in there. We're coming back. It's going to be good. All right, folks, we're back here with the second part of the show. Going to get ready to bring my guest on. We're going to bring Sam Adelson on. Let's see if we can get him on the line, Isaiah. Sam, are you there?
Yes, sir, I'm here. Thanks for having me on today.
Turn him up just a little bit. Sam, good to have you on. Tell us a little bit, who is Sam Adelson? And then tell us who FGA is so people know.
Well, absolutely. Well, most important thing about me is I got four beautiful kids, ages 1 to 8. Mm. And I live up here in the great state of Maine. We're headed into our 6 month winter here in Maine. But other than that, it's a good place to live. I have worked in public policy for about 15 years. I was the chief operating officer at the Maine Department of Health and Human Services for Governor Paul LePage.
Bless you.
For several years. Yeah, we did a lot of good welfare reform up here under that governor. And for the past several years, I've been at the Foundation for Government Accountability, FGA, where I'm the policy director. And one of our major focuses at FGA has been pushing back against the ever-expanding welfare state, you know, in states across the country and in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, and I've worked with Roy and Joe that's with FGA, and good solid policy. You know, they bring us a lot of policy from different states that have ran different bills and got them passed, and, you know, something, as we call it, model policy, so that we got something to go by when we take it to our bill drafting if we like the idea. So I've found them to be, y'all to be really helpful in being able to get cohesiveness. And, you know, if enough states get what I like to think similar to highly similar legislation together, it makes it a lot easier to lift that up to the federal level and get some of our representatives to run some of these things on the federal side to sort of codify them a little bit so that, you know, we build a cohesiveness amongst state and federal with the same ideas. And I think that's y'all's end goal, too. I think you're maybe more state-driven, but you still play on the federal side, but you're trying to get both of them to bring the same policies forward.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, the states are the laboratory of democracy, and we like to say, even though the lights of liberty have gone out in D.C., it sure feels like these days, they still burn bright in a lot of the states. And, you know, North Carolina is one of those states where it's still possible to get good public policy done and prove a model that works. So hopefully it can be kind of adopted in other states across the country. And then, just like you said, the states can actually set a good example for the federal government and for Congress. And you might feel like it would be a miracle, but they might actually do something that has worked well in the states. And we've seen that happen in the past, including with welfare reform.
You know, I'll tell you something real quick. It was kind of funny. In our trip to D.C., we went out to a fairly nice restaurant, Joe's, I think is what it's called there, not too far from our hotel. And anyway, when we walked outside, there was a whole bunch of young people, 20-somethings. A lot of them had on, like, these fake paper mask of Chuck Schumer, and some of them had on ones of Jeff Bezos and Zuckerberg and different things. And so Schumer, I understand, has been holding back a tech bill that would help kind of rein in big tech a little bit. And so, you know, they were all out there protesting because Schumer was going to have a big high-dollar fundraiser that night in the upstairs of that actual restaurant, Joe's. And, you know, they were all out chanting. We walked out the door, and, you know, here comes, there's like three or four of us are legislators out, you know, walking into a crowd. And we realized, well, you know, we're kind of on y'all's side. We don't like Chuck Schumer either. And so I asked him, I said, so all y'all are Republicans? You know, they weren't. I was surprised. So anyway, had to tell that. But Alec has been a good place for us to congregate, to get to know y'all at our American Legislative Exchange Council conferences and other groups like y'all that advocate for good policy as far as taxes and less tax, you know, smaller government, all those things. So I know y'all are a big supporter of Alec, and everybody wants to come out and protest us and say, oh, it's just, you know, fat cat politicians doing this, that, and the other. But the truth be known, there's good work that goes on at those conferences, real good work.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Alec is a great organization, and it's kind of just what we talked about. You've got a meeting of the minds, you know, folks that, like yourself, legislators from across the country that they've seen a lot of different policy, a lot of different bills, proposed laws come across their desk. They know what real Americans, small businesses, and people who go to work every day. They know what they need, what they want to see for direction. And a lot of those voices come together at ALEC and share good ideas and talk about how to make things work better in their state. So, yeah, you might get the occasional protester here or there as well, but that's these days, I guess, probably a badge of honor.
Yeah, I was going to say, if people aren't protesting, you obviously ain't getting nothing done. That's what I always say. So you kind of look, make sure that's happening almost. All right, well, let's dig into what we had talked about when I was up at ALEC talking with you. Our treasurer, Dale Falwell, was on the show last week. I hope everybody out there in radio land listened intently to that, and it was very enlightening. Dale, he lays a lot on you. But the big thing he's laid on us is that hospitals have told us and all your other healthcare systems that, you know, we want you to expand Medicaid because, you know, we're losing our tail with it, and we need more people in there to be able to do the volume to break even in this, and we'll even pay that 10% now that the federal government has gone up to 90. We'll pay the 10 if you'll just expand and put these, you know, 800,000 more people onto the Medicaid rolls, basically raising the poverty level to capture them. And so, you know, there's part of us say, oh, well, that you know, we don't want to see y'all lose money, yada, yada. But then Dale's saying, well, no, actually, in North Carolina, when the truth be told, they're making money, about close to $80 million off of Medicaid instead of losing. So is this the same thing you're seeing in other states, or is this just something in North Carolina?
Yeah, we are seeing this in other states, and I you know, your treasurer's done a great job in this. I think this is the deal. We've seen that the hospital infrastructure, the hospital industrial complex across the country has been one of the leading voices on pushing Medicaid expansion. And it's such a strange thing, and here's why. To me, it doesn't make any sense at all. And I helped run the Medicaid program in Maine, so I saw a lot of these details from the inside. The same exact hospital groups and associations that are saying, hey, we've got to have Medicaid expansion, will leave that meeting where they're lobbying for that, and they'll walk down the hall to lobby for increased Medicaid payment rates because, according to them, they're absolutely losing their shirt on Medicaid reimbursement. And so I always ask them and ask myself, how can you in one meeting say Medicaid is killing us, Medicaid doesn't pay enough, Medicaid rates are too low for us to survive, and then go down to the next meeting and beg for Medicaid to be dramatically expanded?
Well, yeah.
It makes no sense. Something doesn't add up there. And I think what we see is happening is just, they see dollar signs. I don't think they're even doing the math themselves, because if Medicaid, more and more people on welfare, on Medicaid, was the solution, then North Carolina hospitals would be...
They'd lose more.
Really happy. Yeah, they'd be really happy right now, because you've already doubled the number of people on Medicaid over the last 20 years. So something is wrong with the message on that coming from the hospitals.
Well, and you know, I'm trying to figure out, you know, according to Dale, there's a couple set of books being ran. You know, there's the one there's the public seeing it, and most of these hospitals now, they, you know, they don't have to pay property tax. They don't have to pay all the different taxes. They get breaks on this. They get that. They're you know, government entity kind of thing. They hide and shield behind that. We do these things for these hospitals in our area because we need health care. And, you know, they're supposed to be a charge-off kind of to offset what they get for the people that are poor that can't pay or that can't come up with the money or whatever. And you know, according to Dale, they're weaponizing their credit score, which has become such an integral part of everybody's life. You know, like I said, once again, in North Carolina right now, you know, you don't have to have a driver's license to vote, but I had to show my driver's license to get into the hospital to see my mother-in-law, to actually prove who I was. I don't know what that did, but I did. And then on, and I guess where I'm going with this is you know, they're coming after us in such weird ways and doing such weird things, the hospitals are. It's hard. It's almost like they're keeping us busy, you know. So we're not paying attention. That worries me. It's almost like there's a shell game going on. Am I just imagining that, or is that what's really happening to try to keep us busy and don't look over here, look over this way instead, so that we will, I guess, turn a blind eye to what we think is actually a heck of a mess of a problem, the way we're doing Medicaid. And even though we've got managed Medicaid now, it's still an astronomical amount of money spent every year on the group we have.
Oh, absolutely. I think you're right on here with the issue of charity care and the tax exemptions. And I think, you know, it might be beneficial to those associations and groups to be talking about debating about expanding welfare rather than talking about their own finances. You know, I don't think anybody, when they think about the kind of the top of the list of people in North Carolina who need extra financial help, I'm not sure they're thinking about hospital CEOs, and they would be right because they're doing okay. And so I think when you look at these issues like charity care, as a nonprofit group, a nonprofit hospital, you're writing off these millions and millions of dollars in taxes, and in exchange, supposed to just provide the basic care to that the few uninsured folks or someone who's having trouble paying a bill. And we're seeing across the country, not just in North Carolina, but it's certainly a big issue there, is, has been documented, where they're not, the hospitals aren't living up to their end of the deal. And they're looking for another revenue stream instead of making sure that their tax breaks are coming along with that level of charity care. So what we'd like to see is to make sure you can dig into those books and figure out, okay, you're providing valuable services in the community. We appreciate that. You're not going to pay any taxes, but part of that deal, you got to help take care of some of the neediest folks in the state. And I think that's a fair bargain.
Well, and now I think you're familiar with silver status, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and you may want to explain that, because you probably can do it better than I can, to our listeners. But silver status, if I'm not mistaken, the Biden administration, on their own, without the legislature or even the executive branch of our government in North Carolina, has basically bestowed upon us. I take that back. I think Roy Cooper did kind of sign off on it, so now that I think about it. But they basically bestowed upon the state of North Carolina their own Medicaid expansion of about 200 and some odd thousand people. Explain the silver status, kind of what that is.
You're on the right track with it here. So, you know, not to be lost in any discussion about expanding Medicaid is that North Carolina is already extremely generous with what's provided to folks who are in need. Okay, so the silver plans are part of this that I'll get to, but a lot of what you're hearing there in the legislature and around in the Medicaid debate is, well, there's all these people that have nothing, and we've got to help them. We've got to take the federal deal and help these people. Well, that makes North Carolina sound like you all don't do anything for people already, and that's crazy, because North Carolina covers almost every kid in the state with any up to, you know, double the federal poverty limit. has Medicaid available to them already. North Carolina already covers parents of young kids that have low income. They cover pregnant women with incomes up to double the federal poverty. So, I mean, you've got 2 million people on Medicaid already in North Carolina, and you're already generous with that program. And here's where the silver plan comes in. So just what you described, recently the federal government came in and said, you know, for anybody over at the federal poverty line or up to 150% of the federal poverty line, we're going to waive all costs on a silver level plan that you can get on the federal marketplace. This is a private healthcare plan subsidized by the federal government, 100%. And that's new, you know, here the past couple of years. And again, it's not Medicaid, not a government plan. It's subsidized private health insurance. And you've got 320,000 people in North Carolina right now that have that free, federally funded private plan. And if you expand Medicaid, by law, they have to give that plan up and go on the government program, which would really be a shame. And, I think the question for hospitals that confounding is those rates of reimbursement that they're going to get from that private plan are much better than Medicaid rates.
Right.
So why did they want to push people off of these silver plans into Medicaid? It's not helping the uninsured. It's just shifting people out of private coverage back onto the government.
Well, and, you know, if I'm not mistaken, no copay, no premium pay. I mean, it sounds like a plan, but it's darn sure a lot like Medicaid. And by Cooper, I guess, okaying letting the Biden administration do that, I mean, we've kind of signed up for something that nobody really said that was a good idea. It's just, hey, this is what we're going to do for you and to you. So that's where I have a problem. And now one thing going on in North Carolina, too, that a lot of people don't realize, I think it started back in the spring, and you probably don't know this being from Maine or whatever, but one of our largest healthcare providers, Atrium, is actually getting ready to finish up their merger with Advocate Healthcare. And so Atrium's name is going to change to Advocate Healthcare. And that'll be 6 million patients they have on their rolls over 6 states. It'll be the 5th largest nonprofit. Now, the funny thing is Atrium supposedly has $13 billion in the bank, and they're a nonprofit. Now they're doing a merger with another company. And to tell you the truth, they're actually the ones, I think, that are buying the other company. Atrium's the big player in this, but they're wanting to change their name. I'm thinking they may not like their marketing of the name they have, so it sounds good to switch to a different name that people aren't so PO'd at. So, what do you think about these mergers? Because that's what's happening all over. I'm sure it's happening up in the Northeast also.
Yeah, I bet you have a lot of North Carolina for-profit businesses who'd like to have their nonprofit bank account there.
Yeah, tell me about it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's just another example of kind of healthcare becoming more and more big business. That we've seen develop, like you said, in pretty much every state. And, you know, I think that's the issue here with Medicaid expansion is the memo has gone out at the national level, at the hospital association that, hey, we should do this. And I don't know, you know, even your good local hospitals who might recognize the dangers in this, maybe they're just being shouted down by the more political voices at the higher levels of these big healthcare and hospital conglomerates. And, you know, that's too bad. Because I think if you talk to the local people, they understand more people going on welfare is not good. Those are workers those are people who would normally fill a job, maybe in a hospital, that instead are getting a monthly check and their government Medicaid, and they're staying out of the labor force. And that's a huge, huge cost to North Carolina, not just in dollars, but in work ethic and in workforce, that's causing this huge other issue. So, you know, when it comes to Medicaid expansion, do you want to look more like Florida and Tennessee? Do you want to look more like California and New York? I think I know what North Carolina wants to be, and I can't imagine it's more like California.
Well, I just see trouble on the horizon, and the North Carolina Senate, they were putting pressure on the House, which I serve in, during the last budget cycle, as we ended up our sort of the second part of our biennium budget and our short session, to do something on Medicaid expansion, and we just, as a Republican caucus, there was no appetite to tackle it, that issue in a week's time or less. And so we didn't come to court. But I can tell you right now, the pressure's still there. It hasn't gone away. And as soon as we show up for a session starting in January, it'll be sitting there waiting on us. And I'm sure that the Senate's going to push hard to want us to take this to get a budget deal done. And I just think we're signing up for a very unknown mandate, because once you start signing up and take these people, you don't really know what the cost is going to be of their health care, because we're buying premiums for them, but these policies to a point in our managed Medicaid, but that doesn't always say that there's not going to be more out of pocket with the co-pays and the different things, and then we're taking on more people and we don't know their health situations, and you know, we're taking them off of their own health care, which they're paying for, and basically sucking them into ours. So that's reverse capitalism if I ever heard it. And like you said, we're probably taking away some incentive to show up and work that day, to a point, for the fact that, you know, okay, well, I don't have to show up so I can keep my health care at work. I'll go on the silver status. I'll do this. I'll do that. I think a lot of us take jobs because of the health care is provided in them or access to it. So, you know, we're down to 1 minute. I know we've rambled on a little bit, but I'm not sold, Sam. I'm just not sold on expansion. And I know that's probably something you'd like to hear. I'm sure it is.
100%. And it's everywhere it's been tried. Enrollment is double or triple what they say it's going to be. The cost will be out of control. There's no deal to be had. Who are you going to negotiate with? The big guy, Joe Biden? I mean, there's no negotiation to be had. This is a massive welfare expansion to able-bodied adults. And it will change North Carolina forever in a bad way.
Well, once again, I always tell everybody, I swear, not only am I a North Carolinian, but I'm a U.S. citizen, I'm pretty sure, because I send tax money to the U.S. Treasury every year along with the Department of Revenue in North Carolina. So Joe Biden is a man that's broke and doesn't know it, making deals that he can't fund. And why would we as a state want to take a chance, since we do have money, we are viable right now? I don't know. This is one that makes no sense to me, but it keeps on coming. We're just done with time. I appreciate it, Sam, you coming on. Thank you so much for the information.
All right. Thanks a lot. I appreciate you having me on.
See you, man. All right. Folks, let me say a quick prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, dear Lord, we just thank you. We thank you for all you do for us. I pray for wisdom, Lord. I pray you give us divine guidance in how we go about spending the money of the citizens of North Carolina. Be with us. Lead us in this. In Jesus Christ's name, amen.